Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokane7.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio and film and music editor for The Inlander.
And welcome to Movies 101, that show that paid attention in history class, well, mostly. What we did pay attention to helped us put into perspective some of the biggest events of the American story, not to mention some of the individual figures who helped shape that story. Talking about events, few 20th century trials were bigger than the one that came to be known as simply the Trial of the Chicago Seven, which is the title of an Aaron Sorkin written and directed film. And speaking of individual figures, few are better known than feminist icon and author Gloria Steinem, who in all her guises is the subject of Julie Taymor's film, The Glorias. Let's begin this week's show by stepping into our virtual time machine and adjusting the dial to the year 1968. In this current time of political polarization, it's easy to forget that in 1968, the United States seemed to be on the verge of revolution. The war in Vietnam was raging, race riots had hit several major cities, anti-war protesters were demonstrating publicly, and the whole country seemed ready to explode. And an explosion is pretty much what happened that August in Chicago at the Democratic National Convention, when protesters clashed violently with Chicago police. It was the aftermath of that melee when first eight, then seven of the men who helped organize the protest were put on trial, on which writer-director Aaron Sorkin focuses his Netflix film, The Trial of the Chicago Seven. Casting a number of familiar faces in the roles of real people, Oscar winner Eddie Redmayne as Tom Hayden, for example, and Sacha Baron Cohen as Abby Hoffman, Sorkin both captures the antics that occurred at the trial and, in flashback, the events of the demonstration itself. Sorkin doesn't shy away from pointing out the faults of all the players, from Judge Julian Hoffman, played by Frank Langella, to Hayden, Hoffman, and the other defendants, but he never strays far from the larger conflict that was the root cause of it all, the war that was killing thousands of lives, Americans and Vietnamese, every single week.
Yeah, I liked the Trial of the Chicago Seven almost in spite of my better instincts, because there are moments in this film that play like catalogs of Aaron Sorkin's worst instincts as a writer and a dramatist, because you have, you know, this purple dialogue that sometimes sings and sometimes just like thuds to the ground like a bunch of lead. You've got this self-important tone that we've seen him, explore, especially on shows like The Newsroom. And then there's this ending that, as I understand it, based on my research, did not actually happen the way it happens in the film. But it's this ending, it's like an audience slow clapping in an underdog sports movie from the 1980s. And it's so laughable and so badly done that I almost expected it to be a fake out, for him to pull the rug out from under us and say, just kidding, it didn't happen that way. But no, according to this film, it did happen that way. And it's just really, really terrible. But I think the form of the courtroom drama can salvage a lot. And maybe I'm just a sucker for that form, because I was surprised how after the first 15 minutes where I kind of had my guards up and I thought, this is way too cutesy, this is just Sorkin pulling out all of his greatest hits, I was surprised how involved I became in this. And I think it's just because Sorkin knows how, for all of his other faults that I outlined, he knows how to pace a story. And he certainly knows how to pace a courtroom drama. I mean, this is the guy that wrote A Few Good Men. And this never comes close to being as good as that film was, or the play on which it's based. But it has the same kind of propulsive energy to it, where we do get kind of involved in the conflicts going on between not just the judge and the lawyers, but amongst the defendants themselves and amongst the prosecuting attorneys. And so, I liked all of that. And it is sort of structured like The Social Network, which is, of course, the screenplay that Sorkin won his Academy Award for and is one of the great films of the last decade or so, because it's built upon depositions and interrogations and back and forths within this courtroom. And then the film flashes back, and we can see those things happening as they did, but from various points of view. So it's sort of following that template. So this definitely feels like, kind of old-fashioned meat and potatoes style old Hollywood filmmaking, and yet it does have kind of that, you know, that 21st century snap that you expect from Aaron Sorkin. So even though it has a lot of downsides, I mostly enjoy this. And you know, I have to be honest, because it's probably not cool to say that I liked this movie. And I don't want to say that I wanted to hate it, but I will say, I don't know if you had the same experience, but for about the first 15 or 20 minutes, I was just like, am I going to be able to get through this whole thing? And then just the, you know, the gears of the story clicked into place and I became involved. So I was surprised that I ended up liking this as much as I did.
Well, we'll let Mary Pat jump in here in a second, but I just wanted to say, I agree mostly with you, Nathan. I didn't have any problem with the first 15 minutes. And of course, the two of us have a whole completely different situation because we lived through this period of time. And to tell you the truth, in August of 1968, I was in the Army, and in a couple of months, I would be on my way to Vietnam. And I was still reeling from the deaths of Martin Luther King in April and Bobby Kennedy in June. So it's like, what is going on? So I connected to the movie in a completely different way. And while I agree with almost everything you're saying, the weaknesses of Aaron Sorkin, what I really did appreciate were most of the performances. Mark Rylance as William Kunstler was terrific. And Frank Langella as Julius Hoffman was amazing.
I'm going to predict that Sacha Baron Cohen, even though I had kind of problems with his performance because you can't separate Sacha Baron Cohen from Sacha Baron Cohen, I have a prediction that he'll get the Academy Award nomination for playing Abby Hoffman because the Academy loves awarding comedians for doing semi-serious work. And that's what he's doing here.
Well, and I think that it's hard for me to view this film apart from the trial sequences because, you know, this has become such an infamous trial in sort of legal history circles and so forth because of the reluctance to prosecute these defendants to begin with. I mean, this was a law that was passed targeted, some would argue, specifically at this type of activity. And I thought Michael Keaton's performance as Ramsey Clark was really pretty amazing too, because, you know, he said, no, I'm not going to prosecute these people. And then of course we have a new president, a new way of being in the world and so forth. And the defendants were prosecuted, but I agree. It's really interesting to hear the perspective of somebody who didn't live through this because Nathan, you of course immerse yourself in any project that you take on. And so you read a lot of the backstory, you know a lot of these things about the film and also about the history. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out or how people react who maybe don't have as much of a context or whatever, because, and I'm trying to figure out, is this a story for our times? Is this something that we should be aspiring to? From a legal system perspective, perhaps not. From a social movement perspective, perhaps so. I don't know. I mean,
well, I think that the reason that Aaron Sorkin made the Trial of the Chicago Seven is because of its contemporary parallels.
Yeah, I think
he's pretty clear in that. And I also want to say that when we're talking about, you know, this particular point in history, where obviously there are people that are still alive that can speak to, you know, I was there when it happened and here's how it actually went down. The way that the characters in this, or the figures in history are portrayed here, I think is more interesting than I expected. And I think my favorite parts of the Trial of the Chicago Seven involve the infighting amongst the Chicago Seven themselves, because these were guys that, let's not forget, were basically lumped together in almost arbitrary ways and sort of out of convenience to kind of create this narrative that they were all, you know, sort of working together. And compared to a movie we may be talking about later on this show, I think that it shows that the figures in history were thornier and more complicated than, you know, a Wikipedia summary is going to allow. And we can see that even within these moments of great togetherness, where all of these people were essentially fighting for the same things, there were still personal conflicts where people were saying, like, I think that this needs to be handled differently than this guy is doing it. Abby Hoffman is a joke. The tension between Hayden and Hoffman in particular, I think, works really well in this.
We haven't talked about Eddie Redmayne's performance as Tom Hayden, because, you know, he's sort of one of those chameleon-like figures anyway, but I appreciated what he did. I think it's It's also intriguing to find out what happened to these real life individuals subsequently, because, you know, they were the sort of pick poster boys for what happened in the 60s. And a couple of them, such as Hoffman and Rubin, died really young. Bobby Seale went on to write a cookbook about barbecuing.
Tom Hayden went on to have a political career in California as a, as an assemblyman and as a state senator.
And Mary Jane Fonda.
Yes. And the ones who are still alive are in their 80s now. And so I think that, you know, a couple of them wrote books. And it would be, I think, intriguing to get their perspective on what is happening today, how it's the same and how it's different. And also, you know, I think that the Aaron Sorkin approach doesn't always work, Nathan, as you pointed out at the very beginning, but in the end, it does work here. And so I think this film has a lot to recommend it for this time and for people who are interested in legal show trials and for the performances and so forth.
Yeah, and if nothing else, it should draw people back to the actual facts and learning about this particular part of American history, because it's really, really important. We were talking about The Trial of the Chicago Seven, Aaron Sorkin's written and directed movie. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to look at The Glorias. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
There have been a lot of biggest political stories of 2020. Impeachment, COVID-19, the protests, and now the election. You can help NPR and this station cover the next biggest story by donating today.
Please contribute today at SpokanePublicRadio.org.
And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed the Aaron Sorkin film, The Trial of the Chicago Seven. Let's now move to a rather unique Julie Taymor biopic titled The Glorias. I mentioned Taymor ahead of the woman whose life she dramatized, Gloria Steinem, because she has so distinct a filmmaking style, which she's shown in past features such as Titus, Frida, and Across the Universe. Here, Taymor, in adapting Steinem's memoir, My Life on the Road for Amazon Prime, portrays Steinem in four different periods of her life, and she uses four different actresses in the process. Ryan Kira Armstrong is the preteen Gloria, Lulu Wilson is the teenager, Alicia Vikander is the young woman, and Julianne Moore is the adult. Taymor's conceit is to put all four actresses on a bus, having them on occasion commune as a kind of Greek chorus on the events of their life, as Taymor documents it. That includes being on the road with her huckster father, played by Timothy Hutton, her having to care for her invalid mother, her attempts to break into the publishing world, and her gradual growth as a leading voice in the burgeoning women's movement, and so on. Not all of it works. Taymor's attempt to use a Wizard of Oz visual metaphor at one point being a prime example. But when the film concentrates on Steinem herself and the perseverance she gradually developed to become a leading feminist voice, what Taymor gives us is well worth the watch.
I agree. And of course, I might know a little bit more about Gloria Steinem than maybe other people. Can't say for sure. But I did have the opportunity to read her autobiography, My Life on the Road. And quite frankly, at that time, I was surprised because, of course, I realized that Gloria Steinem didn't burst onto the scene, you know, as a 20-something young woman. But I really had no knowledge whatsoever about her background. And so I believe that putting that context into her life and what happened to her subsequently, what she became, what she did, is an important feature of the women's movement, I believe, and her life, of course, in particular. Talking about the film, though, it's hard if you're going to make a film based on a book that's basically a straightforward presentation of someone's life. How can you do it in a way that's interesting? So we can sort of unpack, Dan, what you said about in the intro, the different things that Taymor chooses to do here. First of all, she casts four different actors, two girls and two women, to play Gloria Steinem. And of course, that's not that unusual, although I think the fact that it covers such a span of time, although not there's not that much of an age difference, at least initially, between the portrayal of Gloria Steinem as Alicia Vikander plays her and the Julianne Moore portrayal. But I think that choosing to use the two little girls to portray her first in a very young age and then, you know, more at the tween, early teen age, I liked that choice because I think it would have been easy to sort of forget or not focus sufficiently on that part of the story. And so I think Taymor made a good decision there. The bus thing did work for me. It was a little hokey, but I was willing to go with it. But yeah, there were a couple sequences that I just think, I mean, we knew they were probably coming from Across the Universe, Taymor's earlier film, that something was going to go sort of off kilter. And so are these brave artistic choices? Or should an editor have gotten in there and said, it doesn't really work, but maybe Nathan feels differently.
Well, I hated Across the Universe. And so therefore I hated the fantasy sequences that looked like deleted scenes from Across the Universe. So I kind of wish that those had gone. But with the Glorias as a film, I mean, there are stretches of this movie, because something we haven't mentioned, this movie's about 2.5 hours long. And so it's trying to cover all the bases. I mean, it starts when she's a child and it goes until she's probably in her, I think, mid-60s, they say, although they skip around a lot in the later parts of her life. And so there are stretches of this movie that are about significant chapters in the biography of Gloria Steinem that worked so well as individual chapters that I almost wish that they had taken up more time in the movie. So, I mean, the whole thing about her going undercover at the Playboy Club, which is what started her journalistic career, or starting Ms. Magazine, or everything involved in the World Conference on Women, I almost wish that maybe those had been the main focus of the film instead of all being sort of just kind of like pieces that we stick with for a while and then move on to other things. And then there are her relationships with all these figures like Dolores Huerta and Bella Abzug and Flo Kennedy that could have been movies unto themselves, but those characters just don't feel like they're really filled in completely because there's so much that this movie is trying to get through that they almost feel like afterthoughts. So, I mean, I think I get what she was doing here, what Taymor was doing here, but I think by broadening her scope so much, she almost ends up saying less about Gloria Steinem as a person than a movie that had maybe a more narrow focus might have. So she didn't come across as a complex, contradictory human being here. She kind of came across as a monument, essentially. And even though I thought that both Alicia Vikander and Julianne Moore were really good and got the look and cadence of Gloria Steinem down, and their performances are pretty strong here, this felt a little messy and all over the place to me. And I wonder if, like you said, if maybe an editor had come in and thought, you know, well, this part's really good and this part isn't, and this part doesn't need to be here, but this part should be expanded. Maybe this would have worked a little better, but parts of it I think work really well.
Yeah, well, we may have a slight bit of disagreement in the sense that I think that it was really important for Taymor to concentrate, to key on her relationship with her father and with her mother, because I think both of those help shape her as a woman, as a confused woman who finally found her voice. I mean, she took the weaknesses of both those characters and the strengths, and she ended up running with them. So I really think that was an important part of it. I do agree, though, that some of the other parts that you're talking about, the beginning of the magazine, her actual finding of a voice, I love the one part where she can't even talk in front of people, but she learns to be able to do that. All those are very important parts of anybody's development, but particularly an icon like Gloria Steinem.
Well, we've talked before, because now we think of her as, you know, an activist, as an icon, but at the core, she was a writer and she was a journalist. And we've already talked previously in looking at other films, how difficult it is to capture that aspect of someone's life or their career. And I thought that Taymor did a good job of sort of having us watch her work, but then putting us in the milieu of the environment in which she found herself.
Right. Dealing with men who treated her, you know, it's
dismissively.
Like, yeah, dismissively is absolutely the right word.
And I think that she doesn't shy away from any of the sort of, you know, I think that Playboy Bunny undercover article, did have an impact on the seriousness with which she was taken subsequently, because there wasn't a full appreciation for what she was trying to do there. The other thing that the film doesn't focus on is we see her asked repeatedly throughout her lifetime, oh, why aren't you married? Why aren't you married? And then in the end, she does get married, but there's not anything about that at all. And I think that that would have presented maybe a more complete or complex picture of why she did, we had the wedding part, but I think a little bit more on maybe what prompted her to marry at age 66.
Yes.
Well, yeah, I want to go back to the scenes with her parents when she's younger. And I think that is a good point, because I agree that those scenes work, because her father, who's played by Timothy Hutton, is this kind of, he's almost like a con artist in a way. He's always on the road and he's always trying to stretch a dollar as far as he can. And then her mother, who has mental health issues, but it was a journalist herself. And we do see, as the film goes on, how she has, descended from these people. And also the fact that, she's on the road with her father a lot, that sort of, carries over into this idea that she was touring a lot with her own social causes. So I think there's a really great movie in here. I don't know if the finished product that we got is great, but it has great elements in it. So I don't know if that makes it more of a disappointment or what, but I think it sounds like you liked it more than me.
I think it just makes it a typical Julie Taymor film which there are just great things. And then there are other things.
Baffling things. And I appreciate that about her. I appreciate that about her. She doesn't, she takes the swing. I'll give her credit for that.
We need to point out also that she had three Academy Award winning actors to deal with: Timothy Hutton, Alicia Vikander, and Julianne Moore.
There were a lot of Oscar winners on the show when you bring the Sorkin film into it too.
Yes, right. Exactly. And that was The Glorias. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster. And earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Murray Pat Truthart, and I discussed The Trial of the Chicago 7. Let's take this moment to thank Peter Glarberg for both producing and engineering the show. We thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that streaming cinema has to offer. Until then, remember these words from Gloria Steinem, her own self. Feminism has never been about getting a job for one woman. It's about making life more fair for women everywhere. It's not about a piece of the existing pie. There are too many of us for that. It's about baking a new pie. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.